Hi, everyone. Well, thank you. It is such an honor to be here this evening. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to A Vagabond Christmas. It was Christmas of 1999, the winter that we all graduated from Boston University. And like every group of 22-year-olds who think that they're invincible and allergic to responsibility, we decided that we weren't ready to adult just yet. So what did we do? Like other 22-year-olds, we bought visas. We moved to London, all seven of us. Very, very normal. So all seven of us moved across the Atlantic and we settled in London. Seven kids masquerading as adults. We decided that we were going to take a gap year from reality. We were determined to live, work, and travel for a whole year. Unfortunately, though, not one of us anticipated the fact that flying home for the holidays would actually require money. So suddenly it's December. And we're broke, and we're stubborn, we're emotionally immature, and we are wildly unprepared. And that's how I ended up hosting what we eventually called our Vagabond Christmas. When we moved to London, we found a very colorful, two tiny bedroom flat in Shepherd's Bush. It is at the end of the pink Hammersmith tube line with an open kitchen the size of a stamp. We lived in a wonderfully scrappy corner of West London. There were street markets, there were football pubs, and there were bars where we actually got lucky enough to watch a few sets of Coldplay play right before they hit it big with Yellow. Yeah, I know, super cool, right? But the overall part about Shepherd's Bush is that was like this swirling kaleidoscope of immigrant neighborhoods. And also my favorite kebab shop, which, while delicious, also definitely violated at least two or three health codes. But it was good. At 2 a.m., nobody cares. It was chaotic, it was loud, and it was absolutely perfect for a group of 22-year-olds. We were drinking pound beers on Tuesdays at Bad Bob's, and we were booking last-minute flights anywhere to Europe for a pound on Friday when it was payday. And we were absolutely convinced that we were starring in our own indie film. So, cue forward to your favorite scene from any indie film. I'm going to say John Hughes. It was pouring rain, it was cold gray, and it was our first Christmas away from home. We set a rule. And the rule was no one spends more than 10 pounds on a gift, which meant that the gifts were absolute chaos. But we had something to open that day, creative, thoughtful, total chaos. But there was also another part of this. So together in that cramped flat, we were playing board games, we were playing charades, we were listening to music, we were drinking a lot of wine, and we were trying to pretend like we were perfectly fine being that far away from home. We all kind of cramped in and we sat on our blue velvet couch and we were surrounded by these like sloppily painted but incredibly chic, in our minds, orange walls. And we were trying to figure out how we could ration our phone cards so that we could all call home. I don't know. Does anybody remember phone cards? Right? Okay, thank you. That's before we had unlimited calling plans, especially if you were international. It was like, this is tough and we were broke. So trying to figure out the phone cards, who could call who, how should we do it first? So we figured it out. We passed the phone around. We all sat together and called our families. Oh, my God, yeah, London. It's amazing. It's so cool. Yeah, really great. The tea is all right. The crumpets kind of suck. But, like, you know, things are fine. Life is good. We're happy we're here for Christmas. And then as soon as we would hang up, everybody would, like, crumple into a group hug. We would cry for longer than anybody would care to admit. Even to this day, we're like, I didn't cry that long. But we made it through. And we pretended like we were absolutely fine. The bottom line is, there were no stiff upper lips that Christmas in Shepherd's Bush. The Americans did not have them. But we did have is we had holiday magic. And that magic that night was the food. Everyone brought a dish. And without knowing it, everyone wanted to bring a piece of home. The first was Ted. Ted was my friend from Massachusetts. He was Greek. And his family owned a restaurant his whole life growing up. And so Ted shows up with this giant pan, almost as tall as he is, of pasticcio. And if you have never been lucky enough to have pasticcio, I want to paint this for you. It's like lasagna and macaroni cheese met at a club at like 2 a.m. and they decided that they were going to have a really fancy baby. And that baby has long tubular noodles. It's layered with perfectly spiced ground beef with cinnamon, which was kind of weird at first, and then I was like, this is amazing. And then it's topped with thick, silky bechamel, which when cooked for the right amount of time becomes this like incredible custardy top that's kind of crunchy, and it was just, it was like a hug in a casserole form. And it blew us all away. And then after that, my girlfriend Lisi showed up, Liseth, and Liseth is Lebanese and Colombian. And so Lisi walked in the door, and she has another big pan, but her pan is not all put together, and it required all of us to work over a whole bunch of wine that afternoon. We pulled up chairs, and we wound up stuffing these beautiful little dumplings with this meat and onion mixture into something that she called sopa de sombreritos. And so we stuffed all these little dumplings into dough, and then we shaped them into, guess what? Sombreros. And then they, hence the name of the dish, and that, then they were dropped into the broth. And that broth is the stuff that cookbooks are written about. Because the broth was garlic, and it was minty, and it was tangy yogurt, and it was creamy, and it was thick, and it was alive, and it was bright, all at once in one bite. And everybody in the apartment were like, what is this? Like, what are we eating? And then we took one bite, and we all just kind of collectively went, this is divine. Like, it was an amazing moment. And then Priya and Zenda showed up, and they lived on the other side of London from us. Priya and Zenda showed up, and they were both from New York, and they brought samosas. Unintentionally, they also brought second-degree burns. We all provided first aid, and everything was fine. But frying anything in London in a flat the size of a shoebox poses, you know, possibilities for injuries. So their samosas, though, were absolute perfection. They were fluffy. They were potatoes. They were spice. And the whole smell just wrapped our tiny orange living room. It just, like, wrapped it into this, like, feeling like a blanket. It just felt like we were getting this huge hug. And to this day, I will tell you, anytime we see them, they will say that the scorch marks and the permanent scars on their wrists were absolutely worth all of that. So, you know, a lot of memories that stayed with us. And then finally, Chelsea showed up, and Chelsea wound up becoming my maid of honor at our wedding. And Chelsea from San Francisco showed up. She brought her mom's famous artichoke dip, but Chelsea also brought an incredibly terrible sense of direction, because she got off at the wrong tube stop. She walked 20 minutes in the wrong direction in the freezing rain. She jumped on a double-decker bus to get back to my flat. And when she showed up with that dip, you better believe, she had a cardboard box that was, like, soaked. She showed up, and she was holding that shit like it was the Olympic torch. Like, she was like, here it is. It is amazing. She did not realize that the correct tube stop was basically across the street from my house. Nobody told her until a couple weeks later. But she was soaked. She was freezing. She was triumphant. And that dip became my forever favorite. I make it every year. And in fact, in the spirit of giving, and because it is the holidays, I'm going to give you guys the recipe now. So get out your phones. It is very quick. Everybody pay attention. Here we go. Are you ready? It's 1 cup of mayonnaise, it is 1 can of quartered artichokes, it is 1 cup of Parmesan cheese. You're going to mix it all together in a bowl, put it into a pan, put it in your oven for 20 minutes at 350. It gets crunchy, crusty, beautiful on top, and you can only serve that with Wheat Thins per her mother Linda's instructions. Had to be with Wheat Thins. That was hard to find in London, but you know what? We figured it out. You cannot, though, mess up this dip if you try, and everybody will love it if they like artichokes. So there you go. Now, after Chalice, and we were diving into that dip and enjoying the wine, John showed up from Long Island, and John brought with him black and white cookies. Now, he had never made black and white cookies, I think, let alone any cookies before. And so he had 20 phone calls to his mom, which cost almost $100 in those phone cards we talked about before, which I'm like, you could have just find a place. He was like, not the point. So it cost him almost $100. He got them perfect, though, but I need you guys to picture this very attractive 20-something slaving over this, trying to figure out how to make these cookies. It was basically like watching him in the Great British Bake Off, but with much worse lighting and a ton more swearing, because they won't let you swear on that show. But it was awesome. And the cookies were incredible. So much so that he later said to me on the day his daughter arrived that the only thing that ever rivaled his pride in those cookies was the day that his daughter arrived. So, the last one to arrive was Sarah from New Jersey. Sarah showed up. She brought an antipasto platter. To make it, though, to, like, find all the right meats and cheeses that she had grown up with, she wandered around. She finally found this, like, incredibly tiny Italian deli in London. And along with the deli, she wound up founding this whole community that she didn't even know existed. And so for her, her dish, while amazing with the salumi and the cheeses and all that great stuff, it was also her doorway into finding a sense of belonging while she was incredibly far from home. And the antipasto was incredible, but the friendships that she made was even more so. And that comes then down to me. So my contribution was my mom's pot roast. So I finally learned the secret to make my mom's like super secret juicy like pot roast that Christmas. And it's one word. I don't know if anybody else in this audience are cooks, but can anybody think of one word to be like, what's a really good, what makes a good pot roast? I hear sear. It's searing. Yes, but low and slow is part of it too. If you have to spice and sear that meat, you sear that meat, you get a good crust on it, and then you cook it low and slow. Oh, that's the magic. So I found that out. So we got it brown. We locked in the juices, let it simmer all day with onions, carrots, and celery, which is known in Mirepoix. And so that cooked all day long in the Mirepoix. It created this rich, fatty, savory magic. But smelling the pot roast cook in that London kitchen, the smell just transported me. And because all of a sudden, I was 8 years old again, and I was back home, and I was sitting on the floor in my new Christmas PJs, and I was fighting with my brother over whatever the toy was that he wanted, that I wanted, that everybody wanted. And my dad was walking around singing in his deep baritone, taking turns kind of pulling us both up off the floor and dancing around with him on his feet to Sam Cooke or to James Taylor while my mom was making Christmas magic in the kitchen. And all of those memories all came together and combined into that one pot in the kitchen in London. Because by the time we all sat down that night, seven kids from everywhere who brought all these different dishes, Greek, Lebanese, Colombian, Indian, Jewish, Italian, American, Irish, in this tiny shepherd's bush flat with a Charlie Brown Christmas tree and mismatched chairs, we all kind of realized something, that every dish at the table was someone's family. And that every bite was someone's story. And that every flavor was a piece of home. Because that night we learned that the holidays, they're not really about where you are. And they're not even about who you miss. Although we missed everybody, right? We missed everyone. It remains one of the most beautiful holidays that I've ever experienced because it taught me that home isn't a place that you fly back to. Home is wherever the table's full. And it's wherever the food is shared. And it's the people around you that make you feel like you're exactly where you're supposed to be. And so with that, I wish you all delicious food, incredible friends, many laughs, and a very happy holiday.